The 15-game winning streak has come to an end. 101-91, the Brooklyn Nets beat the Toronto Raptors, and we haven't said it in a long time, the Raptors lose.
It wasn't like we were overlooking them or anything. We know they're a tough team, a playoff team, and they played us tough pretty much every time we play them, and tonight was no different.
We're trying to be the best team we could be April, May, and June. And I think that's the constant message that we've all had. And no matter who's in front of who's behind us, we got to worry about ourselves. And really, once we get to April, May, June, we want to be the best team that we can be and keep continuing to get better at that point.
Well, it's over. The world will never be the same. The 15-game win streak has come to an end just in time for the NBA All-Star break. The Raptors fall in Brooklyn last night. Just happy to be here. It's snowing a little bit outside.
Raps Nation's okay. Don't worry about it. Life's okay.
You checked in
it's
with
good.
Them?
Yes.
You checked in with
We're
all,
still
all
good.
Of
We're still in second. It's okay. How many text messages I got last night? It's over. Oh my gosh. How could they perform like that? We had the streak going.
You're making that up. You did not get a lot of text messages from people.
People are sour that the streak is over. Yes. But it's okay. Things are good.
Still in second place. You're, yes. You're putting
actually,
the song.
You're actually quite soothing, I will say.
Yeah.
I'm
surprised. I didn't get any text messages from people freaking out. I think that could just
at
be
all?
Because people, well,
did you get
I was,
me at all?
I was having,
how many text messages did you get yesterday?
Is your
I was having some text messages on some other subjects in the Toronto sports world. Just happy to be here this morning, by the way. It's snowing a little bit outside, and I was concerned that my car, which was briefly parked in a Dollarama parking lot, was going to get trapped in a snowbank. No.
You were not at Dollarama.
Stop no, I was it. Not at Dollarama.
You don't shop at Dollarama. Come on.
Yeah, like, are you,
are you calling me
Look at his cashmere hoodie.
I know.
Give me a break.
I wasn't there to shop. Okay. So we sat down, a couple of us, this morning, and tried to envision Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins calling Reese McGuire into his office this morning to have a discussion about an alleged incident that happened in a Dollar Tree parking lot in Dunedin, in which McGuire is accused, and I think we're speaking in facts here because he acknowledged, accused of enjoying himself to a hardcore porn video and being caught by a female passerby who had parked her car in the vicinity, proceeded to call the police, as you would do in a situation like that. We tried to envision the conversation between Atkins and McGuire this morning. So I will play the role of Ross Atkins. Reese, it has come to my attention that you were caught pleasuring yourself in your parked car in the parking lot of a Dollar Tree in Dunedin in the middle of the day.
Was that wrong? Should I not have done that? I tell you, I gotta plead ignorance on this thing, because if anyone had said anything to me at all when I first started here, that sort of thing was frowned upon.
Just, I mean, you're supposed to have a take.
Yeah.
Mine is, if you read, so I always love this stuff, Ashley and Ziggy, too, that the English, the British tabloids get a hold of this. Okay. The Daily Mirror had this first, and TMZ has since come through with some more details. But my favorite part of the entire report that I read in the Daily Mirror piece was that the officer asked Reese McGuire the very basic question, like, why didn't you wait till you got home? And the response was, like, I'm paraphrasing, yeah, that's good point. Good point, sir.
Oh, gosh.
Like, how does he walk in and face his teammates this morning?
Sheepishly. Very, very sheepishly. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I was in that situation and a friend of mine got caught doing something along those lines. I feel like it's definitely a roastable offense. Like, I don't know if you live that down. When I heard what had happened, I was talking to someone like, oh, Reese McGuire got in trouble for exposing himself in public. And I was like, okay, best case scenario, he was urinating in public or something along those lines, like had some drinks, went to use the washroom against like a wall, that's exposing himself in public.
And Florida has stringent laws, so it could have been something like that, even less.
Yeah, then I was like, okay, or maybe is it along the lines of something like Austin Matthews from Arizona this summer? Was he, quote unquote, just kidding around and like moon someone or whatever amateur, immature stuff that, you know, some of these guys think is hilarious? And then when I sat and actually read what happened, I was literally jaw dropped because I could not, like, never in my wildest dreams did I expect to read what was on those pages. And listen, maybe Ziggy's someone who can speak to what the guys would think in the locker room or the clubhouse when something embarrassing happens in the news with one of your teammates. I'm not sure that this specific thing has happened to you before, but something along those lines where does everyone just pretend like it doesn't happen? Are you allowed to say something? Is there whispering and giggling behind their back? These are things I need to know, Ziggy.
Yeah, I don't really know what he was thinking. So, yeah.
Well, we're not asking you to get into his brain. Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of questions. Like the Dollar Tree.
I love how both of you are looking at me like I'm going to like solve this problem or
we're not asking you to get in the locker room.
I find that funny, but it's not really funny. It's a tough situation for him and for the Jays. You just start a new season. You have all these, you know, new acquisitions. It's kind of exciting. And this kind of takes the headlines. So, yeah. Both of you are staring at me. It's funny.
We're not staring at you being like, so Ziggy, when you're at a Dollar Tree, what goes through your mind as an athlete? That's not what we're saying. We're saying the awkwardness in the locker room. Someone's like arrested. Someone gets in trouble with the
nothing.
League.
I've never had this. This has never happened before. So I don't know.
And maybe in the history of the world, it's never happened before.
Well, it's probably happened. There's a deep psychological dive here. So why in the first place?
Yeah.
Then is there a particular clientele you're thinking is going to be at a Dollar Tree that you're trying to, quote, impress? No, I have no idea. Why would you go to a Dollar Tree that?
Who would be impressed by that?
So is he an exhibitionist? I don't know what's going on here. It's the craziest story. I just couldn't believe the salaciousness of this. I was like, oh, my God. Like, dude, you probably are 7 minutes from your house.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have compulsions in our lives, but certainly we have exercised control over said compulsions. Like that one.
In the police report specifically, the officer's like, when I looked at his phone to show me his address and he was watching extreme pornographic content, I was just like, uh-oh.
Yeah, don't follow it up with the sweatpants comment.
I wasn't going to say about that. Right. I just can tell you that I certainly said goodbye to you guys yesterday, not thinking that this is what I would be discussing at 6:09
Well, and this is your last show this week too, because you're flying to Chicago for NBA All-Star Weekend.
Yes.
So this is kind of sort of your Friday.
And I'm going to need a break after this story gets in circulation a little bit more.
waving the white flag. I mean, all we can do is have fun with it. But we've put the poll question up, or the poll question as it may be today. What Toronto sports story has got you most interested on this Thursday morning? The rap streak ending. Freddie back for the Leafs with a question mark, because we don't know that yet. They play Dallas tonight. Or Reese McGuire. And I put this up 10 minutes ago, and we're all closing in on 100 votes already, and Reese McGuire is actually winning. So that tells you where our headspace is at as a society. People want to talk about the Reese McGuire situation, and we'll continue to do that. We have a former Blue Jays catcher coming up at 7:30. We're not going to corner JP or Encebia with this stuff, but from one catcher to another,
That's how you should start it.
Yeah, from
JP, from one catcher to another. What was going through with
There's mine? Nothing grown up you can offer about this. I mean, it's schoolyard, school age stuff where you're just giggling like an immature teen. But the rap streak does come to an end.
Yeah, Ziggy jinxed it. It's never going to end, yesterday.
No, you know who jinxed it? Hugh Burrell.
Why?
He sat here in the six-pack yesterday, and he absolutely guaranteed a win. He guaranteed a 16th straight win for the Raptors in Brooklyn.
I don't believe you.
No, go back and listen to the tape.
Go back and listen to the tape.
I'm not the one disputing the facts.
You're the one that has to prove it. The burden of proof lies with the accuser.
We'll check with Hugh.
I don't think that's true, actually.
In 20 minutes time. No, it's not.
The proof does not.
Maybe in a civil case in the United States, but that's not what we're dealing with here. So they drop a 101-91 decision to the Brooklyn Nets last night. And Ziggy was on text with about 17 friends who were panicking and told them to relax. The Boston Celtics also lost, so the Raptors still have that crucial two-game lead for second place in the Eastern Conference. Is there any notion or any truth to any kind of notion that, hey, you know what, maybe it's just okay that this streak is over because now the pressure's off. Go into the break, come back, play the Phoenix Suns. You got a big game against the Milwaukee Bucks coming up in about a week's time. Just get the ball back on track after a bit of a break.
It was going to end. It had to end. It was never going to go forever and ever. Amen. But did I think it was going to come against the Nets? Not particularly, but the Nets have been playing some good basketball without Kyrie Irving. I think I said it yesterday that the Raps are guaranteed to win if Kyrie plays, right? Because he's been someone who's been a little bit interesting. You heard Perkins actually
Kendrick
earlier.
Kendrick
Perkins going in on Kyrie and his style of leadership and his dedication and commitment to the Celtics at the time. Kyrie's a very interesting dude. I think he's a polarizing figure. But the team who was lethargic, the Raptors I'm talking about now, they were lethargic. They were making turnovers that they usually don't. They were a little bit sloppy on their passes. The energy was just low. And here they gave themselves a chance to win. When you look at the way that the Nets played, they scored 101 points. You hold your opponent to 101 points in the modern day NBA when people are scoring 140. Yeah, you have a chance to win. And they were within 10 with like 3.5 minutes late in the fourth or something along those lines. So they could have had it, but you know, it just wasn't their night, and that's okay. I think that we want to talk about heading into the All-Star break and being a little bit distracted, wanting to go to the Bahamas, having your family on your mind, your plans, people are coming to visit, you're going home. All that stuff comes into play. And I'm not saying I agree with it. And I think that you should focus on the task at hand, no matter who you are. But I think the Raptors at 40-15 get a little bit more leeway to have a kind of a woof of a game after they've done what they did.
When did the Raptors do what the Leafs did before the All-Star break? Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
No.
No, not
stop
the same.
Stop trying to draw comparisons. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it would be more excused in my mind because of what the Raptors have done. Listen, the Leafs have not earned much goodwill around here with me, so it's not the same, no.
I mean, what was their average? 120-plus points average over this streak, so you get held to 91. That's pretty impressive. You can say what you want about Toronto. Their shooting percentage was nowhere near where it's been this year. From outside, nowhere close. The Nets played a good game, just simple. I mean, pretty solid for them. They weren't. The thing about the Nets last night is they weren't good either. It wasn't like they got exposed and blown away. It's a team that grinded them down, and if you're other teams in the league right now, you definitely have to watch the game tape on how they defended them and how physical they were. I thought those were the two biggest takeaways from last night. And to, you know, you can look at this Nets team and yeah, they're further down the standings, but they've had so many injuries. They haven't been playing well the first third of the season, and I don't know. Do you want to? You want to meet them in the first round?
Yeah, absolutely.
The Brooklyn Nets
when they get healthy. I don't know. They start getting healthy.
Yeah,
Irving comes back.
But Ziggy, who do you want to face in the first round then?
Orlando.
But you love Orlando. Until next year. I'm going to win the chip in 2 years.
Ziggy will be our at Orlando correspondent for games 3, 4, and 6 if it gets there.
I will be more than happy to go and cover this series in Orlando.
The new guy doesn't get to come in and go to Orlando before all of us.
Staying in Evan Fournier's guest room.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you're right about the physicality, though. They killed the Raps on the boards. They had 12 offensive rebounds. That's not going to be conducive to a good night. This is a problem that the Raptors were dealing with earlier in the season when their offensive rebounding, their defensive rebounding was not, it just wasn't good enough. Other teams were getting to the glass too much. And when you have a lineup that features long players like Pascal, OG, Ibaka, you're expected to kind of be able to clean up the glass and just finish the possessions, right? Just finish those possessions. Offensive rebounding for Toronto, they play a pretty spaced out system, so there's not going to be too many people in the paint or available to crash the glass. So, okay, that's fine. They're not going to be getting like 60 rebounds a game. But on the defensive end, you just need to shore it up. But again, these are just housekeeping items for this team. They know what they need to do. A Raptors loss is never, you never sit there and you never deduce it after and say, oh my gosh, okay, there are a checklist of things that I really need them to focus on right now. It's just like you kept it close. You had a chance to win down the stretch. You didn't get to do it, kind of on to the next with this Raptors team.
This is one of the best first halves in the history of a Toronto professional sports team. I mean, that's just the truth. 40-15. Nobody saw that coming. I don't think any of us saw a complete and total collapse in the post Kawhi universe, but I also don't think any of us saw 40-15. I remember we did our preseason win projection, and I said, this team is going to host the first round, games 1 and 2. They're going to be a 3 or 4 seed. They're going to win 48-50 games. If this team wins 48-50 games now, that's a huge disappointment because they're playing massively under 500 over their final 27 games. Like, they're going to blow right past that mark. And I think it's a stretch to say they win 60 because they would have to go 20-7 down the stretch. But that, too, is not impossible. This is a 55-58 win team.
Yeah, I didn't see them. I love what I'm watching out of them. I didn't see this. I, predicted they'd be on the road to start the playoffs, and Kawhi would have a bigger impact than this. And a lot of guys that are playing well, especially off the bench, to me that's been the biggest difference with this team, is who we didn't even expect to play this year or to get any time. So that's been the big thing for me. And yeah, if they don't finish 1, 2, or 3, this is going to be, I don't know, it's going to be a bit of a disappointment. So I like what I'm seeing out of them. I didn't see this. I love it. And I want to see them make another deep run again, with or without Kawhi. It's exciting.
Yeah, and I think they're absolutely more than capable of doing that. The Leafs host the Dallas Stars tonight. 7 o'clock, our coverage begins right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's also a game you can watch on Sportsnet. Frederik Andersen, we just await word from the morning skate as to his availability. I am in the Jack Campbell corner. We got more than 1,000 votes on yesterday morning's poll. If Freddie is healthy and ready to go tonight, who do you start? Ziggy and I both argued in favor of Jack Campbell because he's on a nice run here. 5 of a possible 6 points in his first 3 games as a Leaf. Ashley said, Frederik Andersen, get your guy back into the net. Get him back with his feet underneath him. Get him going. And 73% of poll respondents agreed with you.
Well, if he's not 100%.
Oh.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
We're talking about him being 100%. Sorry, just one more time.
Ashley, 73% of more than 1,000 respondents.
Ashley, the voice of the people.
Agreed with you.
Ashley, the voice of the people talking. That's how I would like to be introduced going forward.
.ca.
Until I lose my next poll. But Ziggy, so to your point, I honestly think that when he's skating before the Arizona game, and he goes off the ice first, that could have been what you guys were talking about yesterday, of them being like, are you ready to go? And Frederik Andersen saying, hey, I'm like 90, 95%. And then the team saying, I'm not going to I'm not going to risk it. We're just going to like play it safe. We'll give Campbell the start again. I feel like if that was the situation yesterday, then that was the time for them to play it safe. If he's ready today, he's going to go, because the question is not up for debate. If he's not 100%, he doesn't go. You trust Campbell. He's playing great. No problem. If it was Hutch, you're like, are you sure you're not closer to 98? Because we could like really use you. That pressure is gone. It's been removed. So if we're talking 100% and both players are ready to go, they're good to go, doesn't make sense to me. It never did to keep Campbell in the mix.
Well, if Anderson was even close to the other day or as close today, I still believe that he doesn't go in until he's 100%. No chance of aggravating the injury.
Yeah, no one's...
There's no chance that he goes back in. I think he would come back in quicker if it was Hutchinson in net right now. That's what I think.
Well, the Leafs haven't won in regulation time since they went to Dallas on January the 29th. So the Stars come in tonight. Now, the Leafs put up 4 in Dallas that night, but that is a complete aberration. The Dallas Stars don't give up goals. They also don't score many goals, but they don't give up goals. So you've got to have somebody in there who is... well, this is the obvious comment. Going to keep the puck out of the net. Now, maybe Freddie comes back and pitches a shutout and shuts me up, and we all have a happy Friday morning tomorrow looking back on tonight's game. But I think there's a combination here of making sure that Freddie is 100%, and then on the flip side of that coin, there's a little bit of the, as we've come to know it, load management that can factor into this. If Jack Campbell is playing well, why not play him Saturday night as well? When they go to Ottawa,
This is part of this is part of our poll question, is like, how much do you play him when, if Anderson's healthy and you play him more? And if you're on that poll question and you said Anderson, you don't think Campbell should be getting the number of starts that he deserves if the guy's playing well?
Well, there aren't a lot of back-to-backs left either, Mike. I mean, they have a... they have a pretty favorable schedule as things tend to go, because we know with the 5-day CBA break, the mandated break, plus the All-Star break, the schedule is a little more compressed in this day and age. 31 days in March, typically you're getting a few back-to-backs in there. I mean, that's been the Leafs' history and every other team's history. I don't think they have a back-to-back in March. If they do, it's only one. So they've got a very favorably spaced-out schedule. You could ride Freddie hard in March if you wanted to.
Well,
but I just don't think that's wise.
Well, they're going to... no, it's not. And they're going to split the Senators Sabres the next back-to-back this Saturday, Sunday. The question is going to remain, though. Yeah, how much do you play Campbell? If he's playing well, you have to give him more games. And this is the thing with starters, is that you don't want your starter, your number one, sitting on the bench, even if your backup plays well, right? If you have your number one guy like the Leafs have Anderson, you don't want to push him, shelve him just for the sake that, oh, hey, our backup's playing good. We don't really need you right now. That doesn't send the right message to your starter. And that's going to be the question going forward. If you're in the coach's room and, you know, at Scotia, and you're sitting there, Keith and company, and you're trying to talk about how do we set this up with our goaltenders, it's definitely a conversation. It's the same thing as when you have one of your top goal scorers and they don't play well. Do you sit him out and scratch him for a game if he's having a rough stretch? No, you still play him. You still give him the minutes until it's completely... you have a complete string of games where it's just so bad that you have to start playing someone else. We've seen Nylander get scratched, not scratched, benched in a period. So that's kind of what you have to wrestle with as a coach when you have this starter that's so good and you relied so much on, and then you have a backup that comes in and plays well. It's like, it's a balance. You can't just shelve Freddie if Campbell starts playing well. But at the same time, I would ride Campbell until Freddie's 100% ready to go. There's no chance of aggravating that injury.
Leafs and Stars, 7 o'clock tonight, right after Tim and Sid here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, a game you can watch on Sportsnet. And we are asking you the Twitter poll question today at SmartAsh, at Mike Zygmunis, at Scotty Mac Thinks. What Toronto sports story has got you most interested this Thursday morning? Is it the rap streak coming to an end in Brooklyn last night? Freddie back for the Maple Leafs? We don't know yet. So that's a question mark. Or Reese McGuire down at the Dollar Tree in Dunedin, Florida. That sounds like a sitcom, down at the Dollar Tree. J.P. Arencibia at 7:30. Vivek Jacob at 8 o'clock. Justin Bourne at 8:30. Hugh Burrell, who jinxed the Raptors, in studio next for the six-pack.
Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
All right, and I heard you guys chirping me. I had nothing to do with this, by the way.
You had a lot to do with it.
I had nothing to do with the Raptors' streak coming to an end last night.
Well, let's just see about that.
They look to extend their franchise record winning streak to 16 tonight in Brooklyn. They're 18-1 against the Nets in the last 19, so they're going to do it.
Who was that?
He sounded handsome, whoever he was.
That sounded positive. What do you?
Exactly.
It wasn't like a.
Yeah, I wasn't jinxing
gold him into like the loss.
Don't defend him.
Wow. I'm not defending. Hey, I heard what I heard.
Hey, if I had that much. Okay, let's see if I have that much power. Okay. I will never win the lottery. Never. We're going to see how that plays out.
You also can't hear good looks, you.
That's right. Well, some of us you can. Hey, Raptors saw their winning streak end at 15 last night after a 101-91 loss in Brooklyn in the final game before the All-Star break. Post-game, Raptors All-Star starter Pascal Siakam, he's taking the long view.
We know what's important. Like, we're not worried about winning streaks. Like, it's about continuing to get better, understanding what we're not doing right, and making sure that we fix them. And, comes April, May, and June, like, we know what to do.
That is a great attitude, and that was the attitude echoed by all of his teammates last night. It's like, okay, we didn't play very well. We lost. Okay. Is there at least a little bit of this team thinking, kind of glad it's over? Now we can just get back to the day-to-day. You know, getting the job done. We're not concentrating on the streak anymore. Let's just get back to playing.
I don't know if they were concentrating on it anyway.
Well, they say
believe that they were. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, let's keep it going. Let's keep rolling. Let's keep stringing good games together. The streak narrative was much more ancillary. It was much more for us. So, of course, they were hearing about it. Of course, they were getting asked about it. But I don't know if it was in the top five things that they were focused on headed into the Brooklyn game. So, yes, I think that there's probably a little bit of relief when it comes to this. How much
are they going to appreciate this break that's coming up now? Everyone just kind of decompress, as Lowry was saying after the game.
Yeah, who doesn't like some time off, you?
Yeah. Wish I was going to Chicago.
Yeah, not all of us can take vacations every weekend.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my
nice
God.
Like flying first class,
I know,
too.
Jeez, I know.
Picked
That's
up
what
at
I
the
heard.
Airport
That's
in the
what
limo.
I heard.
Oh, my. Is the station paying for that? That's what I want to know.
Yes.
Raptors' next game is next Friday at home to the Phoenix Suns.
Two.
Leafs at home to the Dallas Stars tonight. Leafs beat Dallas 5-3 just a couple of weeks back. Freddie or Jack Campbell tonight? We're not sure. We have to wait on the status. We'll find out, I guess, after the morning skate this morning. Yesterday, Leafs re-upped forward Pierre Engvall to a two-year extension worth $1.25 mil annually. So, is it Freddie or is it Jack Campbell tonight? If Freddie's not a 100% ready, it's got to be Campbell, right?
If he's not ready, he's not going to go in. When you have a backup that can win and is playing well, 5 of the last 6 points, it's given this team a little bit of confidence. You have to go with him. If Freddie is 100%, it's hard to believe he won't go in net. But at this point, this is a great chance for the Leafs to give Freddie some rest. They've rode him hard all year. His little bit of a lull here the last 6-7 weeks. You can put on how much he's been playing. And that load was just way too much for him, for any starting goaltender to play with. And to have Campbell come in like this, this is like a breath of fresh air for this team. And this is what they wanted. They've addressed one of their needs.
I go with Jack Campbell tonight. And if Freddie's feeling good heading into what will effectively be a home game on the road in Ottawa Saturday night, because the Senators don't draw flies anymore and Leafs fans will go up to Ottawa and pack the place. Get Freddie in there Saturday if he's ready to go.
Three.
Nice night in Vancouver where they honored the Sedin twins last night. Daniel and Henrik seeing their numbers 22 and 33 hoisted to the rafters. Impressive pregame ceremony. Former teammate Kevin Bieksa absolutely killed it on the mic.
You know how we'd all come to our first training camp in really good shape? Well, Hank never got that memo. He brought an extra 15 pounds with him instead. But he lost it. And then there's Danny. He's got a legitimate candy addiction. He eats half of his body weight in sour keys and Swedish berries every Saturday. But
sounds delicious right about now. So, Ziggy, what... I know people in Vancouver loved the Twins. They're absolutely pillars of the community out there. What was the impression they gave to players around the league?
Just to, you know what? They're I know guys that played with them, just two solid guys on the ice and off, really know, you know, there are two of those superstars that never really acted like that, and I'm sure the public opinion of that and what you see in the media, it's exactly what you get with those guys. So, you know, when you're watching their jersey going to the rafters last night, it's, and you hear them talk, it's just kind of who they are. Nothing really crazy. They don't go out of the way. They're not into the spotlight, and that's how they did it. And the big question now is, are they going to be Hall of Famers? Because it is debatable, and I think they both get in. And I mean, they're a nightmare to play against. It was two of them on the ice. They could have played 2-on-5 and somehow have kept the puck and found a way to score some nights.
Yeah, as Kevin Bieksa said during that ceremony as well, they had earpieces. They were communicating with each other, and he's like, he actually did kill it. You're right. He's like, we're on the. He's like, and he's like, we have a Swedish word for the earpieces. Cheating. We've been cheating our whole careers. But I will say, when you have a ceremony like that and every single person that you've pretty much had a relationship with in your career comes out to something like that and comes out in droves, that says all you need to know about those guys.
And I also really like the touch of doing this before a game against Chicago, because if you go back to the early part of last decade or this decade, 2010-ish, Vancouver, Chicago played some pretty epic playoff series against each other, and that was a really good rivalry in the Western Conference for a few years.
Yeah, and the Canucks won that game last night 3-0, after which the Blackhawks held one of those players-only meetings. They've lost 5 straight.
Uh-oh. 4.
Okay, here we go. As spring training opening days go, there have been better ones for the Blue Jays. Jays catcher Reese McGuire is charged with misdemeanor exposure after an incident in a Dollar Tree parking lot in Dunedin last week. There's a court date next month. Jays play-by-play voice Ben Wagner says despite this, he doesn't think that McGuire's status with the Jays is in jeopardy.
It's an embarrassment for him just individually, and the organization obviously having to deal with it at the same time, but I don't think that they're out kicking the tires.
Well, is his status in jeopardy with the team? And how does he...
I think you've got to... Yeah. When you deal with something like this, and I'm not speaking from experience, but I would imagine when you deal with something like this, you have to go through some uncomfortable firsts. You have to have that first conversation with your manager. You have to walk into the clubhouse for the first time since it was revealed that you did a little bit more than shopping at the Dollar Tree. You have to talk to your general manager. You have to meet with the media. So I think as he goes through that process...
That first media scrum is going to be interesting with Reese McGuire.
Yeah, it... I mean...
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but it's all... He... Clearly, there's an exhibitionist component to this. It seems like he's so close to home. It's almost like he left home to go to Dollar Tree and do what he needed to do to set himself up for a successful day. But I think that the way that this plays out is that he kind of gets off on the charges, and maybe goes to some kind of counseling, sex rehab, something along those lines. You didn't like my choice of words here? I apologize for that.
Interesting choice of words. 5 home runs, 11 RBIs, and 105 plate appearances for the Jays last season.
Deadpool hitter.
5.
Moving along. Jays bench coach Dave Hudgens faced the music yesterday. He was the Astros batting coach during their 2017 World Series championship season, a season tainted by the cheating scandal.
Yeah, I have conversations with the coaches, and the only thing I can say is just regret I didn't do something. I wish I could go back and make that happen again and do something, but, you know, that's history, and we just have to deal with it from right now.
Scotty Mack, you look like you have something to say.
I'm just sorry I got caught. Dave Hudgens gave John Lott an interview in The Athletic. It was actually on Winterfest weekend, whenever that was, early January, and he was quite vague at the time, which I suppose you could argue is appropriate because not as nearly as much had come out. But now it's like, hey, it's pretty much all out there. Geez, you know, I did hear some of the trash can banging.
He's the batting coach. How could he not?
Well, they were all, if you believe, and why wouldn't you? Because Ken Rosenthal, Evan Drellick, and Mark Carrig are all reputable people. If you believe that piece that came out 2 days ago in The Athletic, Jeff Luhnow knew all about it, and Carlos Beltran had such a hold on that clubhouse that even the manager, A.J. Hinch, was scared to approach Beltran and say, you got to stop doing this. Everybody knew. So now you're getting your comeuppance, and you're like, geez, you know, that's, you're right. I should have spoken up.
All these men are cowards. They are cowards. The media and that report that you talked about handed them a scapegoat on a silver platter in Beltran. They named him in the report from MLB. He got fired. He's the only player to face repercussions. He's the ringleader of it all at 40 years old and not exactly relevant to their batting average at that point in terms of the way he used to affect a lineup. It's so easy to say, oh, I was scared of him. I didn't want to disrupt the clubhouse and the power structure that was there. I wish I could have done something. It's cowardly.
Especially
you had a part in it.
Especially because he's not in the game anymore.
It's like, the easiest thing to do when you're given an excuse and you can ride that or you can literally hold yourself accountable. None of these players are doing it. None of these coaches are doing it. They should be embarrassed.
Six.
Speaking of a league that embarrasses itself on almost a weekly basis, the NFL has reinstated Myles Garrett after his six-game suspension for swinging his helmet at Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph in Week 11. 6 games? Is that enough? Was it the timing right to bring him back before all the OTAs and training camps begin? 6 games enough for that?
I figured that this would be the case, and I do think he has paid his penance. And what were you going to do? Suspend him for another 8 games? I think, without being able to prove it, I think that there was more to that story that led up to that reaction on the field.
You think that Mason Rudolph may have said something to incite?
Yes. 6 games was more than enough. But the next time, if there is one for Myles Garrett, there will be a huge, huge price to pay. So he has to stay within himself on the field.
I dislike the NFL so much. 6 games is enough for Myles Garrett and what he did. Okay. I would even argue I would have probably been fine with 4 games, considering the fact that they let people who abuse their wives and girlfriends come back after 3-game suspensions. People that allegedly harm their children come back very quickly. 6 games for doing something in the moment, not that it was the right thing to do, but he's in the heat of the moment in a game against another grown man, and you're going to give him more of a punishment than some people who are literally attacking vulnerable members of the community. The NFL is such a joke, man.
Ashley's on an airplane later this afternoon, and there is a viral video going around social media in which a person reclines her seat, and the man who is at the back of the plane in his seat and therefore can't recline begins lightly punching the seat repeatedly, trying to send her the most passive-aggressive message ever. Move your chair that half inch forward. Who is in the right? Who is in the wrong? We will debate next. Twitter poll question. What are you most interested in the world of Toronto sports today? The Raptors streak coming to an end with that 10-point loss in Brooklyn. Last night they hit into the All-Star break with a record of 40-15. It's been one hell of a first half. Another option, the Leafs host the Stars tonight. Could Freddie come back? Or last, but certainly not least, little springtime controversy for the Blue Jays as Reese McGuire is arrested for an incident in a parking lot at a Dollar Tree. And if you don't know what that incident was, we will revisit it later, but I'm not here to describe it. You can Google. You seen this viral video?
Yes.
So this is like the great debate. I find there are a few topics in this world where people just get totally fired up. One of them is about reclining your seat on an airplane. So a woman on a flight did the whole reclining deal and then pulled out her phone and recorded the man sitting behind her. And this man couldn't recline his seat because he was at the very back of the plane. She recorded him as he repeatedly punched the back of her seat, trying to send her a message, hey, could you lean forward? And the great debate on Twitter is, who is in the wrong? I'll tell you who's in the wrong. The airlines are in the wrong. The airlines have made flying an impossibly maddening experience.
Okay.
And this is what it's doing to people.
It is dividing us. This is a very divisive topic.
There's no foot room anymore. None.
I have different problems in life than you. I'm not tall, so it doesn't affect me that much, so I can't relate, but I've heard that it's a problem for a lot of people, so I can empathize to a certain degree. Listen, the only answer to this, recline or not to recline, is to absolutely recline. I'm sorry. I'm going on a plane today, and I am throwing that seat back. Like, I do at Caravana. I'm just throwing it back. Right away, as soon as we're up in the air, the seatbelt light goes off. Whoop, that's what the recline is there for. I'm supposed to sit up straight and have my neck be even more sore because you couldn't manage your time properly and you want to get on your laptop and do work instead of have a glass of Chardonnay? No, not my problem. Sorry.
You've got to go with the slow recline. You can't, I don't like the look.
Do it in increments? Is that what you're saying? Just
when
nudge.
I do it, first off, I do not recline my chair. If it's an overseas flight and I wait to the person in front of me. If the person in front of me goes down, I go back. If they stay and it's a long flight, I do the slow recline, but I don't do it the whole way, right away. I do it in two different segments. So I go halfway to start, but I do it slow. I wait, do something, and then I'll wait and I'll do the second half of it.
That's even worse.
Hoping you don't get noticed?
That's even
worse.
Just,
it's not as
in on the person behind you and they don't even
abrupt,
have a chance to address it.
It's not as abrupt. So you just slowly do it. I appreciate the people that give the look behind, but you know the look? They give the look, they turn around their chair, but
like it's coming for you.
Yeah.
We should all be in this together. There's no foot room on airlines anymore. You pay for extra foot room, which includes the emergency exit row.
Yeah.
Would you like to pay more?
Which doesn't
recline. To save others' lives.
Which doesn't recline,
which
by
doesn't
the way.
Which doesn't recline.
The
I'm taking the train for the rest of my
life. You're walking?
I'm taking the train to Europe this summer, presuming I go to Europe this summer, and there's a train to get me there. J.P. Arencibia at 7:30. Vivek Jacob on the Raptors at 8. Justin Bourne at 8:30. Leaf stars tonight. Who starts in goal? Who should start in goal if Freddie is healthy? And we'll look back on a brilliant first half of the Raptors season.
I mean, I think for us, like, we didn't really think about it. It was about every single night coming in, having the same focus. And you know, there was games where it didn't look like we were going to win, but we ended up winning. And I think we just taking those learning experiences. And like you said, we know what's important. Like, we're not worried about winning streaks. Like, it's about continuing to get better, understanding what we're not doing right, and making sure that we fix them. And, you know, comes April, May, and June, like, we know what to do.
Pascal Siakam, be real. Last night, we're sitting there. It was a humdrum game, but you're waiting. They're down 8, they're down 10, they're down 12, 8, 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and you're like, they can come back. I remember Freddie jacked up a 3 that hit the back of the rim, and I thought, okay, maybe they don't have it tonight. But if that goes in, I think that would have cut the lead from 9 to 6 with 7.5, 8 minutes to play. Just one of those nights where they weren't shooting the basketball, but it's, I mean, 40-15 through 55 games. The first half of the season is long since in the rearview mirror from a technical perspective, but it's the end of the first half because we're now at the All-Star break, so it's an apropos time to talk about it. This has gone, I would say, not just as well as you could have hoped. I would say it's gone better than anybody
They've exceeded expectations.
Without question.
And whoever said, oh, yeah, second place, they were going to win the conference, I don't know if I really believe that.
Well, I mean, the only thing that could be better is that they'd be in first in the East, except Milwaukee has this asinine record that what are you going to do?
You're going to need them to fall off.
Right, and it ain't happening.
I don't think they will. I'm scared, guys. I'm scared because emotionally, I don't know if I'm prepared for this team to be eliminated from a postseason race. I don't know if there is a team in this city that I've loved more than this group of guys right here. What they've been able to do, the lessons that they learned from their postseason run, the chemistry that they have together, the fun that they're able to have, but the seriousness with which they take their jobs, the accountability that they seem to hold each other to and themselves. Honestly, it just seems like such a perfect group, and it's something that you kind of all over the league you want to emulate, but you just can't figure out that thing. I was thinking about it last night, and do you guys know how to do card tricks?
Like which ones?
Like
just any
exactly?
card. Do you know how to do a card trick?
No.
Okay, so I feel
I'll bring a deck of cards tomorrow, Scotty. How about that? 5:15, we'll work on a couple.
Here's my analogy, though. The reason I'm asking is because I feel like you see someone do a card trick, and you're like, oh, I want to know how they did that. And they kind of show it to you, and it seems easy. And then you take what you learn, and you try and go to someone else, and you try and execute it the same way. And there's just something missing. There's like that one sleight of hand that's missing. There's that one piece of showmanship that's missing. There's a small step that doesn't allow it to go flawlessly. And I feel like this team has captured that magic where they're just able to kind of overcome things that you didn't really see or you didn't necessarily expect them to. And anyone else who tries to do it the same way, they just don't have that je ne sais quoi, if you will, to be able to match it. And it scares me because I don't want my feelings to get hurt, Scott. Ziggy, well, I don't want to be upset over this. I don't want to come in crying one morning if they're eliminated too early from the postseason.
I mean, I was thinking a few nights ago about this Raptors team because it's Masai. And I was away last week when the latest round of Knicks rumors came out. So I was sitting poolside at Atlantis and just want to throw that out there again.
Oh, my God.
Was that at the Kane? Were you poolside at Kane? What pool were you at?
Well, I was staying at the Royal, but I was over by the Cove, if that means anything to you. So I was over by the Cove.
That's all I wanted was the Cove.
Near the beach. It was just steps from the beach. But I was saying to myself, like, nothing lasts forever, right? So this will come to an end, which is an obvious comment because players age out and retire. But I'm talking even nearer term. Like, maybe Masai moves on and Bobby takes over. Maybe Masai hangs in, and just like Jeff Weltman, but on an even grander scale, Bobby Webster makes a determination at some point, I'm going to go run a franchise myself, become president of basketball operations. Maybe in the summer of 2021, Masai and Bobby both decide to stay, and in the best case scenario, they sign Giannis. In the worst case scenario, not only do they not get Giannis, but we watch Masai and Bobby walk out the door, and there's a fundamental reset to this organization as Kyle Lowry ages out. Serge and others have presumably walked out the door this coming summer. There's a moment in time here, a moment in time where you have a franchise in this city. Think about this city. Think about this city. Harold Ballard owned the Toronto Maple Leafs and wrecked them through the late 70s and the entirety of the 80s. Okay? Example number one. Example number two. Interbrew buys Labatt Brewing, and that is the end of the Blue Jays' heyday, which lasted from 1983, if you want to discuss it, but more like 1985 through to the end of the World Series championship in 1993. Labatt gets bought in the mid-90s, and that fundamentally changes the trajectory of the Toronto Blue Jays at that time. We are in a moment in time here with this Toronto Raptors team where ownership is stable, where there is a president of basketball operations who is better at his job than anybody else in the entire league and also happens to be best friends with Barack Obama, which is pretty cool. There's a young general manager in Bobby Webster who is going to work in the National Basketball Association, should he choose to continue to work in the NBA for at least the next 30 years, because he's a very young man. There is a coach who has been through the meat grinder of coaching, was coaching in places as far flung in the basketball world as Europe only a decade ago, and is now arguably, perhaps inarguably, the best coach in the NBA. The franchise's best ever player in terms of tenure, Kyle Lowry, is still here doing his thing. It is a heady, heady time. And these are the sorts of things that we look back on 10, 20 years down the road and say, geez, you know, I really enjoyed that, but I wish I appreciated it just a little bit more. Let's appreciate it now, because it's happening. And so maybe they lose to Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Final and we go, aw, shucks. But a championship and a loss in the Eastern Final in back-to-back years is nothing to be ashamed of. Maybe they win the East and they're playing in L.A. against LeBron and the Brow or Kawhi and Paul George in the NBA Finals. And maybe they win it. But whatever this is, however this plays out, I mean, this period of time with this basketball team in this city, given the scarred psychology of sports fans through the decades, this period of time will be remembered as among the best that this city has ever experienced from a professional sports perspective.
It's definitely one of the franchises, one of the eras in any sports in Toronto that, I mean, what other time has a team really taken a step that the Raptors have taken in such, I don't want to say such a short period of time, but I mean, I understand it didn't happen overnight, but it's one of those things where this Raptors team and what they've done. I mean, at what point though are you going to be like, when does disappointment? I think that's the biggest thing. What are your expectations? Like, if this team doesn't win, if they don't make the finals, if they don't win the conference, who's going to be upset? Who's going to leave? I think what's devastating moving forward, or something you have to think about, is what you just mentioned, Scotty, and it's the thought of, I think we've mentioned this a couple weeks ago, is everybody leaving. That would be the hardest thing. Worse than, say, they lose in the first round. Everybody leaving, Masai, say he takes everybody with him. That would be the worst thing that could happen to this organization, regardless of what happens
but
this year.
It's so important, Ziggy, I think, not to worry about that today. Like, Masai's not going anywhere this summer unless he's made it clear I'm not re-upping and I'm likely out of here, and then MLSE, Larry Tannenbaum, decide, you know, we can't have a lame duck here.
Let's get some draft competition.
We have to do whatever it takes. But it's an important story. It's a bigger picture story. It is about the future of this franchise. But in the now, as we sit here today, with the quality of basketball that we watch, and as Ashley says, I mean, it's not just that they're 40 and 15. It's they'll punch you in the throat, or they'll out-defend you. Or on the offensive end, they'll outperform you on a particular. They can beat you in so many different ways. Like, I obsess over the bigger picture with all. I find the bigger picture stories in pro sports to be far more fascinating than the minutia and the micro of the day to the day. But with this Raptors team, I mean, with this period of time we're living in, I think we've got to appreciate it, especially because this is an American-based sport. You know, the NHL we view as Canadian, even though there's only 7 of 31 teams, soon to be 32, that are based here. But baseball, basketball, football, they're all American-based sports. The fact that you have to build a team in a different way because it's so hard to lure the biggest free agents, the way that they have gone about this, the way that they have set the culture, the way that they have set the expectation, it's really, really unique, and it's elite.
Until you sign a big free agent, though, I feel like that's the next step for this organization. Can they bring in a big free agent? Will Fred stay?
Well, that's you, a, that's you a keep big... your own guys. Fred wants to be here. It's just the money's got to line up.
I feel like is the next step for this organization. Cause like what you just said, this is an American sport based in the US. I compare the Raptors a lot. And I've heard this conversation before on, you know, the Raptors are the Florida Panthers in the NHL. It's just like, you can't get guys. It's hard to go down there. It's not a hockey market. It's hard to disagree with them because I've seen what Toronto Raptors was 15 years ago, and I've been down and I've played in Florida, and they're not the same. But if you need to make a comparison in hockey, I don't know what other team to kind of compare them to, or what difference, what kind of situation.
But this is a basketball market, though. That I don't think that's a fair comparison, just because this is a basketball market. People are
not today. 15 years ago, 20. I mean, it's just, it has the same feel that of like a Florida. It's a different, Scotty just mentioned, it's an American sport. They have their challenges.
Yeah. I think that like, it's not a win if someone signed here already and they decide to stay. It's like, it's a small victory. Okay. When you talk about the free agents though, it's like, is Giannis coming here in 2021? Is he? Because if not, then the blueprint of what we have in front of us, whether or not it's Masai and Bobby who continue on this path or whether it's someone else who takes over for them, that has to be the blueprint then. Right? Diamonds in the rough, unproven guys, undrafted, super talented, fit into a culture, the right attitude, good character guys. The one thing I will say, though, this team really benefited from, aside from what they have internally, is that 1 year of Kawhi, what Pascal said at the beginning of this segment where he's like, we're not worried about the streaks. We have goals that are bigger than that. We have other things to focus on. It all reminds me of Kawhi when he said the regular season is just practice. The regular season is one long practice for us. The real season starts during the postseason. And that mentality, I think, is going to be the difference. And that mentality is what's going to take them further than I think most of us, as you said earlier, Mike, ever thought they would go this year.
Masai, to me, because he's so elite, Bobby Webster would be the same. It's about coming up with new challenges for yourself, right? When you reach that peak.
I know.
You know, it's almost as if, and this is, I'm not suggesting that I would trade anything that has happened for the sake of Masai and Bobby still needing that challenge of winning a title. But the next challenge has to lie before you. And Masai's always struck me as somebody who's got a broader and bigger view of the world. And so it's like, okay, well, we're obviously pursuing a second championship, but can I lure Giannis here? For example, just as an example.
But don't you guys think that's just human nature?
No, but I mean that. Yeah,
1,000%. So I get that some people it's a bit more ingrained in, I think. And when you look at them, you're like, oh yeah, that's someone who really, they want it for their ego. They want it for their legacy. They're thinking long-term. They want to be somebody that people write about and talk about long after they're gone. But I think it's just human nature. Like, you get a job, you get a salary. I want more money. You get a job, you negotiate vacation. I want more vacation, right? Like, it's never enough for anybody. So to your original point, Scott, and so I guess kind of wrap up this conversation, it's just like, there are so many things that we all look forward to and look ahead to on a day-to-day basis. And there are so many things that we're not satisfied with. Instead, just enjoy the moment, focus on what you do have, not what you could lose. And I think it'll be a much more enjoyable experience for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, they're a hell of a team, and they won the title, man. I mean, whatever comes out of all of this over the next couple of years, there is at least one NBA championship under their belts, and that's key. JP Arencibia will be along at 7:30, and we'll get into Blue Jays spring training. The Leafs and Stars play tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Right after Tim and Sid, our coverage begins at 7 o'clock. It's a game you can also watch on Sportsnet. If you are looking to keep tabs on the Atlantic Division team that is right behind the Maple Leafs, Florida hosts Philadelphia at 7 o'clock, and that's a game you can watch on Sportsnet 360. We're having the Jack Campbell, Freddie Anderson conversation here, but this tortoise race, or this rabbit race for the third spot in the Atlantic Division right now, because the wild card teams would come out of the Metro Division at this point. And even a team like Carolina, who is sixth in the Metro, is right there in that conversation. This is yet another big game for the Leafs. And it is the different narrative and the way that we view this Maple Leafs team as opposed to this Raptors team. Ah, the Raptors lost last night. Whatever. I mean, they're going to get right back on the horse against Phoenix. This Maple Leafs team, by virtue of its 9-10-4 start, the argument that you could make that they waited too long to remove Mike Babcock to get these players going. Big 2 points on the line against an out-of-conference opponent tonight.
The first thing about Mike Babcock, I still think it's unfair to say that to Kyle Dubas, and you know, you should have moved the coach quicker. What if things didn't go well? People would be saying keep Babcock. I mean, it's so easy to sit here and hear
I'm making, Mike, is that they went 23 games into the season with more regulation time losses than victories, which in a league that hands out bonus loser points like their candy on Halloween is not a conducive approach to making the playoffs. So they are still paying for that start, and they will pay for that start for the rest of the season because it's going to come right down to the wire here.
Yeah, there's no gate, and this is why the talk about the goaltending situation right now with Campbell and Anderson is going to heat up even more. It's going to come down to who's playing the best right now. And if Anderson doesn't get the starts he wants, it's going to create competition. And that's what you want in net. And we were talking yesterday, and I finished the show with, you know, what happens when a new player comes in? What happens when a call-up plays well? What happens when the backup goaltender starts playing better than your starter? And the point I was trying to make and something I wanted to get into was lots of players are expendable. I've been in situations where top four defensemen have missed 6-7 games. If you go undefeated through those 7 games, you're worried about your job. And I'm not saying that about Anderson, but in general, when you're a player, unless you're one of the top guys making top dollar, every guy, you know, you don't get rushed back in the lineup.
So you can't get into Freddie's brain. But are you saying he's watched that there could be a scenario where he's watched Jack Campbell play for the last 3 games and thought, some pause.
It's natural that you want to get back in quicker. When your team's winning, you want to get back in quicker. You know what's amazing is that watch when teams lose, watch how many guys go down with injury. And it's not just guys. I'm not saying guys are faking injuries, but it's amazing how many guys get injured and don't come back as quick when things don't go well. And you can look over any team, and I don't want to cross over in other sports because I don't know other sports as much as hockey, but teams that I've been on, when things don't go well, lots of guys get surgery, lots of guys they don't rush back as quick. When you're winning, lots of players come back a lot quicker because you know you want it. It's not even a fact if you're losing your job. You want to be part of that, right? Everyone wants to be part of a winning team. It's fun. It's exciting. And when you're losing, it's the worst. So when you're injured like that and your team's not doing well, yeah, you don't really rush back.
There's no way Frederik Andersen is sitting there being like, uh-oh, better rush back. Feel like my job's at risk. He's the guy here. What I will say, though, and what I believe could be true in terms of the internal competition, which I do believe is healthy in pretty much every scenario, is that he's sitting there saying, okay, damn, Campbell, you got some stuff. I better up my game because I don't want to be the one that's letting this team down when I'm in. I think that's more likely an internal monologue that's happening as opposed to rushing back, worrying about getting hurt again. I think he's seeing Campbell do a good job for this team and being like, I don't want to be the weak link here, so I better step up. And I think that's much more likely than the alternative.
And the one thing we have seen with Freddie is that in each of his 4 years in Toronto now, there have been blips on the radar where he has struggled for a few weeks at a time. And he has had that blip. Now he's out of the lineup. Traditionally, in his time here, his late season has been strong. When he's been healthy, his late season has been strong. We'll see who gets the start for the Maple Leafs tonight. J.P. Arencibia is a former Blue Jays catcher. We'll get his thoughts on the very latest coming out this week on the Houston Astros sign-stealing situation and just what goes on in the first week or so of spring training when it's just pitchers and catchers. Guys start to formally trickle in early in February. The formal report date for pitchers and catchers from a Blue Jays perspective was yesterday. What are you doing at this point in spring training to get set for the season? J.P. Arencibia joins us next. Pitchers and catchers have reported to Dunedin, Florida. Some of the online videos and photos you're seeing, you can tell that the stadium down there has undergone those improvements. Looks a lot nicer. J.P. Arencibia is a former Blue Jays catcher, and he is here to discuss the early days of spring training, what pitchers and catchers go through to begin the process of getting set for the season, and also to discuss some of the now confirmed rule changes for baseball this coming season. Happy New Year, and by that I'm not talking about 2020 because it's too late to say that, but the new baseball season. How are you, JP?
I'm good. I'm fired up that baseball's back. As a player, I didn't look forward to it starting right away. I enjoyed my break, but now on this side of things, it's kind of boring, so I'm excited to get back to work.
What does the first little bit of spring training entail for pitchers and catchers? Because guys will trickle in informally in early February. Then there's the formal reporting date, which for the Blue Jays was yesterday. You got some guys who hang around the complex for a lot of the winter if they live in the area. What are pitchers and catchers doing right about now, JP?
Well, catchers are absolutely getting crushed because it sucks the first little bit for spring training, because literally it's just catching bullpens and catching bullpens and catching more bullpens. So for a catcher, it absolutely sucks. And then for the pitchers, they're just really getting ready. I truly believe that spring training is just for pitchers to get their arms going and get their pitch count up. That's really what spring training is about and why it's so long. So for the catchers, they're driving in every morning going, dang it, I got more bullpens to catch and then more catching work to do. And the pitchers are thinking about what time they can get done with their stuff so they can go golf. Because at the beginning of it, you're just kind of getting in the swing of things until the full team gets there. And then that's kind of when you're like, all right, now it's go time.
Did you ever start a petition to try and just get stand-in catchers for these numerous and obviously tedious bullpens, JP?
You know what's funny is my first spring training ever, I was obviously just a young guy, and Greg Zahn was the catcher. And I remember he used to come in and catch one bullpen and then leave. And then I was like, this sucks, because you know who's wearing the rest of the bullpens, and that's the young guys.
Yeah.
So as I got older, I would make sure that I'd catch two of them and then head for the hill. So when you're a little bit more established and you're the everyday guy, you can kind of ease into these things. But when you're a young guy, you just absolutely wear it. You actually come into spring training like in great shape. You're like 10 pounds of muscle that you put on, all this stuff. And then the first week, you're like down 6. So it kind of, it's a shot to the heart.
I love how you're like, I hated when Zahn would just take one bullpen and leave. And instead of not doing that to the younger guys, you're like, you know what? Smart move, buddy. I'm going to actually follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, I'm gonna do two instead of one because it makes me feel better.
Yeah,
about it.
Pay it forward.
Well, you sound like you miss all of it. Yeah. We're with J.P. Arencibia, former Blue Jays catcher. Spring training gets underway. So some of the new rules, and these are not rules that come as breaking news to anyone, J.P., because they were announced at least a year ago and maybe a little bit longer ago. But they have now been formalized. Starters and relievers must remain in the game for a minimum of 3 batters or until the inning ends. Injury exceptions, of course. Active rosters go from 25 to 26 through to August 31st. And then again for the playoffs, there will be 28 players, or at least a maximum of 28 players that can be carried as opposed to the 40 from September 1st onward for the rest of the regular season. And there is now a 20-second deadline as opposed to a 30-second deadline for managers to determine whether they're going to challenge a play. This is all in an attempt to speed up the game, which is the new obsession. I want to hone in with you on the minimum of 3 batters faced per pitcher. I absolutely hate this rule. I hate it. I think it I know lefty specialists aren't quite what they used to be in terms of quantity of use, but in my view, you've got 25, now 26 roster spots. If you're a manager, you can use as many of those guys on your roster in any given game as you see fit. And then once they're taken out of the game, they're no longer eligible to play that night. That's how it should be. Where do you come down on it?
I actually disagree with you in the sense of I like the competitiveness. The time stuff, I think if it's based off of the time stuff, I think it's kind of washed because that's just another way to try to patch up a system that's flawed right now. But I think I love the opportunity of a lefty having to get righties out, and I love the opportunity of righties having to get lefties out. And I think it's going to make for a more offensive game. And, you know, now where pitchers are going to get stuck is if you come out of the game as a starter and they bring in a lefty because there's two lefties and then there's a righty, and he doesn't get both of those lefties out and the righty comes out and takes him deep. Now, the lefty starter is going to be pissed off, or the starter is going to be pissed off because those are his runs that are cashed in. But I just think that it's going to give – a little bit more of a competitive balance and make guys have to be better. And that's, so I know that I'm one of the few, and I know especially baseball guys that kind of like it, but I think like, hey man, if you're in the big leagues, you need to get lefties and righties out if you're a lefty specialist. So it's going to give some more jobs, but it's going to take away that specialist job, and it's going to make the managers have to think a little bit more about how they're going to, you know, actually fill a roster and then attack a lineup.
It does seem like Major League Baseball is looking to make changes, but you kind of mentioned it. They're kind of putting a Band-Aid on something that's a bigger flaw. What do you see as the biggest problem that baseball is facing right now?
You know, Trevor Bauer, he's out there, but I actually heard the stuff that he was saying, and I agree with him.
About social media?
Yeah, like, you can't, like, there's so many rules that make no sense in the sense of, like, you need to – all the other sports, you watch an NBA game, there's dudes wearing highlighter shoes on the basketball court, and it's not even close to the color of their uniform. Like, in baseball, you're constantly getting fined because you're not wearing a percentage of your – like, let guys have fun. Let guys do the things that they need to do to be themselves and be personalities and be marketable and have people, you know, enjoy the game. I think that's where – we're kind of at in a society is like, hey man, do what you do. And I think people are more attracted to that as fans. I also think as a catcher, this was something that I used to laugh about is I'd always hear these meetings about, you know, time and pace of game, but we would be ready much before we'd come off a commercial break. So we would actually have to wait in the dugout before we'd start throwing our warm-up pitches to start the next inning because of commercials. And I understand that TV pays the bills in the sense of the big TV days, but or the deals. But I mean, is it really about speeding up the game, or is it trying to find ways to be able to do that? I wish also too on the extra inning stuff. I know that it'll never happen, but I think much like a hockey shootout, I wish there was like at the end of the game, it's a tie game. You go to like home run derby style. And, I mean, I know it's a little off the cuff, but I always thought like, man, that'd be fun.
How dare you say Trevor Bauer's out there and then suggest something like that?
I'm just going to warn you, though. We got to warn you, though. Everyone wanted shootouts in hockey, and now no one wants them. So just be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Well, I do like the 3-on-3, though. That's
exciting. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
When you say that you wish that the league would allow players to have personality and express themselves in various ways, you kind of point to the NBA, and I think that's kind of the gold standard in terms of players that are accessible to their fans. How long, though, do you think it would actually take for the younger generation of baseball players to feel truly comfortable being themselves, being outspoken, being brash, being cocky, being whatever they wanted to be. How long do you think that would actually take to infiltrate the game? Because they're still kind of an old guard in place, and we know that how the structure goes and how, you know, the power structure in the clubhouse sometimes wouldn't allow for something like that right away, even if the league decided to take the reins off.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm very much in the sense as well as you. There's got to be a respect about not about what you wear and all these different things, but about kind of the way the professionalism, in a sense, okay. in the game of baseball, because there's really no in baseball. There's not a way to police it other than you hit a guy with a pitch, you know. And I think that's, you know, in football you can make a play, and I'm sure in hockey you can hit a guy. Like there's really no retaliation on certain things if it bothers you, where you can like kind of handle it within the game. Mm-hmm. In baseball, that's the one thing I think that kind of why things boil over. But I mean, I think that it's starting to happen already. You watch Tim Anderson. I mean, Tim Anderson is as outspoken as anybody, young shortstop, and you see, you know, more and more coming through the league. You know, obviously Marcus Stroman's pretty outspoken in the things that he does and how he acts. But I think that it's starting to be more of a thing. And I think, you know, even the commercials, it's starting to be more, you know, he's let the kids play, all these different things. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's the generation is starting to happen. I still think, as in anything, like you do what you guys do for a living, there's a sense of professionalism when you come to work and how you do things. And so I think that you have to make sure that it just doesn't become an absolute circus. But it does. I mean, there are entertainers, and I think that there's things that they have to do that are entertaining and that make it fun. I mean, I don't know how Zig feels about the Carolina Hurricanes and their post game stuff, but I mean, I think that that's brought even a little bit of attention and you know, people that fans that like it. So I mean, at the end of the day, if fans don't show up, then there is really no sport.
I'm with you on that. I like the fact that the Carolina organization has found a way to bring more fans in. At the same time, there's a certain level of where a team can take those post game celebrations, or and I understand in baseball how, because it's kind of similar to hockey in a sense, they don't want to let the personalities of the players come out and trump the actual brand.
Yeah.
And he agrees. That's all I needed. But, no.
I like that.
No, but also, but honestly, if you think about it, in sports, like, there is guys will get upset, and I don't know if there's other guys around the league, you know, when they see the Carolina Panther thing after the game, be like, hey, next time we play these guys, we're going to get after their asses, in a sense, and, like, use my language. But, like there might be a fight early in the game or however it is. In baseball, when stuff goes down, when it into the clubhouse after, it's like, dude, we're going to get that guy next time we play them. And then that's – I know that sounds like barbarian, but it's also – part of the competition, because competitively you're like, dude, this guy's kind of showing me up, in a sense, and it's still a competition.
We'll leave it there, JP, and as the spring goes on, we'll get your sense on where some of these players are at and what the Blue Jays roster is going to shape up and look like. Thanks for this, pal. Great to have baseball back. We'll talk soon.
All right, no stopping at Chipotle's and doing crazy things. All right, guys, take it easy.
Well, can tell you this, I'm not stopping at the Dollar Tree. Vivek Jacob will be in studio at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll look back on the Raptors' first half. Justin Bourne at 8:30 for some Leafs and NHL talk. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We want to get you tickets to see Canada face the Dominican Republic on the 21st of February for their FIBA AmeriCup 2021 qualifier game and get you into the draw, which we'll make tomorrow morning for Leafs Penguins tickets. We'll play Rock and Talk next.
Lead Off presents Rockin' Talk.
All right, Rockin' Talk today for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Canada face the Dominican Republic on Friday, February 21st at Canada's FIBA AmeriCup 2021 qualifier game. And this will also get you into the draw, which will make it 8 o'clock tomorrow morning for a pair of Maple Leafs tickets. This one for the game on the 20th down at Scotiabank Arena. They've got Sid the Kid and the Pittsburgh Penguins in town. You can visit sportsnet.ca/590 for all of our contest details. Before we bring on our first contestant, Here is today's Rock and Talk song. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip to the sound of the beat. Tom in Ajax is our first contestant. Good morning, Tom. Do you have a guess?
I'm sorry, I don't have a guess.
All right. Let's move on to Lanka in Markham. Good morning, Lanka.
Morning, guys. Is it Another One Bites the Dust by Queen?
You got it. No sound but the sound of speed. Machine guns ready to go. All right, Lanka, congratulations. You're going to see Canada take on the Dominican Republic on Friday, February 21st. So a week tomorrow. That's Canada's FIBA America Cup 2021 qualifier, and you're into the draw. So be listening at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning to listen, to find out if you win tickets to see the Leafs take on the Penguins on the 20th. Justin Bourne will be along at 8:30. Vivek Jacob jumps into studio. He covers the Raptors and the NBA. We'll recap the first half, discuss the future of the front office, and just how deep this Raptors team could go in the playoffs. Vivek joins us next.
The 15-game winning streak has come to an end. 101-91, the Brooklyn Nets beat the Toronto Raptors, and we haven't said it in a long time, the Raptors lose.
It wasn't like we were overlooking them or anything. We know they're a tough team, a playoff team, and they played us tough pretty much every time we play them, and tonight was no different.
We're trying to be the best team we could be April, May, and June. And I think that's the constant message that we've all had. And no matter who's in front of who's behind us, we got to worry about ourselves. And really, once we get to April, May, June, we want to be the best team that we can be and keep continuing to get better at that point.
So the Raptors' 15-game winning streak, the longest winning streak by a Canadian-based professional sports team in history, comes to an end in Brooklyn last night, a 10-point loss to the Nets. It sends them into the All-Star break with a record of 40-15, second in the Eastern Conference, of course, behind the Milwaukee Bucks, who've decided that this will be a year that they never lose basketball games. To recap the first half, to look ahead to the not only excitement, but potential pitfalls of a playoff run and the broader story of what this front office could or could not be in the years ahead. We welcome our good friend from Raptors Republic Complex Canada, Vivek Jacob. You jumped into studio with us. You drove through the snow
well,
to get here this morning.
To be fair, I did not know it was going to be snowing.
I would have said no if I checked the forecast.
Real nice. Thanks, man.
But thanks for having me.
It's great to have you in. So 40-15, we were talking about this earlier on in the show. I remember, Vivek, we all sat around this table in early October, and we made our predictions. And I came in at 48 wins and a home team in the first round of the playoffs. You might be a 3 seed, you might be a 4 seed, but you're playing games 1 and 2 down at Scotiabank Arena. 48 wins would now be a colossal disappointment because it would mean that they're under 500 for their final 27 games. Other than Milwaukee being unbelievably good and therefore leading the Eastern Conference, I think it's fair to say that not only has this first half gone as well as you could have hoped, it's been better than you could have hoped. They've exceeded all expectations.
Absolutely. And you look across the board from Kyle Lowry, you look at what his numbers were last season, everyone was saying, oh, maybe this is the age thing and he's regressed. But clearly he was just taking a step back with Kawhi in the picture, and now he's stepped back into being, you know, 20 points, 7 assists. And you look at Fred VanVleet stepping into his role and saying, hey, I've got a chance to get more shots up, and the production that he's had. You look at Norman Powell, what we said all this time that he's been in Toronto, consistency. And he comes in and he's looking like, you know, arguably a sixth man of the year candidate. And so I think when you put all those things together, you've got a team that believes in itself, that has taken a tremendous amount of confidence from winning the championship last year. And they're eager to prove everyone wrong about, oh, Kawhi and Danny are gone. You don't have that it factor anymore.
Objectively, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to rain on the parade, because I was just on record saying that I love this team more than I've loved any Toronto sports team in my whole existence. However, I think it would be irresponsible of us not to at least look through the conference and understand that one of the reasons people thought the Raptors were going to be a 3-4-5 seed is because you didn't think that the 76ers were going to be a disaster. You thought maybe the Nets with Kyrie could add on to what they did last year. You didn't really know what the Pacers were going to be. There was more of a conversation around the Celtics, who have hit their stride lately but didn't come out of the gate real quickly with the addition of Kemba Walker. All that has also factored into this.
Absolutely, and I think the Sixers are probably the biggest disappointment when you look at expectations going into the season. Of course, they lost Jimmy Butler and they lost J.J. Redick, but as soon as they got Josh Richardson in, as soon as they got Al Horford in, you were thinking, okay, the biggest issue they had was those minutes when Embiid wasn't on the floor. And now you have Al Horford to sort of shepherd them. They're going to be great. And now you see the value of chemistry. Now you see the value of trusting each other. And the Sixers just don't have that the way that the Raptors do, the way that maybe the Celtics do. You look at the Heat with their identity. Jimmy Butler fits in like a glove.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at the Sixers, you know, they almost remind me of last year's Celtics, where they just couldn't get it together. And the whole time you're saying, hey, they've got Kyrie. They've got this stacked lineup with Gordon Hayward and
Tatum and Brown.
And, you know, they'll get it together when it matters. But I think we've seen enough evidence in the past where those 82 games are an opportunity to build yourself up the right way for the postseason. And the Sixers, to me, unless they really change things around after the All-Star break, I think there's a chance they could go out in the first round.
Is part of that comparison you make, Vivek, this year's Sixers to last year's Celtics, Joel Embiid is to this year's Sixers what Kyrie was to last year's Celtics? Because he is, I don't want to say he's being cryptic, because to me it's absolutely clear what he's indicating on social media when he mm-hmm. says live long enough and you go from hero to villain.
Yep.
Ben Simmons and his shot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There may be other issues there, but there's dysfunction and it's now playing out publicly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing I go back to is their road record. When you look at how good they are at home,
25-2 at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too shabby.
9-19 on the road. How can you be? That's a crazy split.
They're almost as bad as the Knicks on the road. When you think about that, it's crazy for the talent that they have. I think you are right about Joel Embiid in terms of leadership. You know, that's the one big thing you look at in terms of what separates the good players from the very good to the great, right? We all know these guys are talented.
Right.
But can you get an entire roster of guys to say, hey, get on my back. We're going to do this together. I'm going to lead the way. And Joel Embiid, I think there's been too many times where he's had an opportunity to take the right path and he's gone the other way. And at a certain point, potential numbers, all of that only counts for so much. At a certain point, you know, the Instagram posts get old. Those talking moments after the game, all that gets old. And now it's about winning. And if they can't get it done this season, first round, you're looking at potentially two of the three between Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Brett Brown being gone.
We're recapping the first half of the Raptors season and the NBA season as the league heads into its All-Star break in Chicago. We're talking to Vivek Jacob in studio from Raptors Republic. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Raptors have this big streak. I think they've exceeded expectations on the year. I don't think anyone had them kind of threatening Milwaukee for number one. I don't want to say, can they keep this up? I think that's going to be a big question. It's going to be hard to keep this pace. But what's kind of one thing the Raptors have to be weary of, or one thing they have to watch out for going down the stretch after this, after the All-Star break? Like, what's kind of one thing, if you're, you know, Kyle Lowry being the leader of this team, or Nick Nurse, you know, newish coach leading this team, what's kind of one thing you think they're kind of have to look out for?
Well, I think if you ask them, they'd say injuries. the way they've gone down this season, that's probably their number one priority. If they can just be healthy down the stretch and head into the playoffs, you know, with a full roster, their main core. But in terms of on court, I'd probably say it's their half court offense. When you look at their ability to execute in the games against you know, the teams that are over 500. I think that's where they've struggled a little bit. And frankly, when we looked at this team coming in terms of putting them as a 3-4 seed, you expected them to beat the bad teams. They've built up enough equity and enough of that culture where they just know how to get it done against those teams. But when you go up against the upper tier teams, I think that's where you're seeing Pascal Siakam still try to figure out what it is to be a number one option, still what it is to deal with double teams on a consistent basis. And so I think that is probably the one area of improvement. You look at the games that are coming up where they've got Milwaukee, you've got Indiana coming again, and then in March you've got some really tough games where you've got the Nuggets, you've got the Lakers. And so I think that's going to be a good, you know, sort of litmus test in terms of where that half-court offense is, because we know once they get out on the break, you know, they're the best team in the league in transition.
With Vivek Jacob, Ashley, chime in on this thought as well, too, if I say please, pretty
yes.
please.
Okay.
So, Vivek, we were talking in the room before the segment, and I've been trying to, because I think thoughts, which is always a dangerous thing, but I've been trying to whittle down the hesitation I have, because I want so badly. Leo Routens was, and get well, Leo, having had back surgery yesterday, but Leo Routens was on the program earlier in the week, and he was saying this team absolutely can win the East. This team absolutely could repeat. I mean, why not? But if I whittle it down to the minutia, the doubt that lingers in the back of my mind is if they play the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Final, Kawhi is obviously not on this team. Who shuts down Giannis? How do they handle the freak in a 7-game series such that they can beat Milwaukee 4 out of 7 times without Kawhi Leonard contributing to defending the reigning MVP?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say the doubt that sort of creeps in for all of us is the fact that we have a sample size of 0 when it comes to a team that's trying to defend their title without a finals MVP. We've never seen that. And so, frankly, we just don't know. And so we got to see how it plays out. And as far as planning for Giannis comes down the road, if the Raptors get that far, a big part of it was just effectively building a wall. And we know that he can score in the paint, and he's dominant in there. And so what the Raptors did was, in those pick-and-roll actions where you had Kawhi as the primary defender, and then you had Marc Gasol sort of walling him off, that's where you're testing the Chris Middletons and the Eric Bledsoes on if they can make enough shots. And so that's what the Raptors are going to try and do again. This time it's going to be OG Anunoby primarily instead of Kawhi Leonard. You're going to see Pascal Siakam on him sometimes as well. And if those other guys can hit enough shots, then it's going to be a problem for the Raptors. And the other thing I will say is, you know, a lot of people sort of look at the Bucks as the same as last year because they're putting up similar offensive numbers, defensive numbers. But Giannis has improved his game. He's taking more threes. He's improved in the mid-range. He's seen what the Raptors have done to him last year. So if he himself can make more of those mid-range shots, it's going to be a tough proposition. I think we have to respect the Bucks in the sense that, you know, this is an all-time team right now. If the Golden State Warriors were 46-7, you know, if any other team was 46-7, guess what? It'd be the talk of the town.
No one would shut up about it.
No one would shut up about it. And so I think we have to respect that this is an all-time team with someone who's likely going to be the back-to-back MVP of this league. And it will take something spectacular to stop them from getting to the finals.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you're right about uncharted territory, because it's a team that lost the finals MVP trying to make a run at it. Mm-hmm. But it's also not a team that just jumped on a springboard into success in 1 year overnight. Mm-hmm. It's been a slow build with the same core, with the same purpose, the same fundamentals, the same character, the same everything. So there is a certain level of groundwork that's been built up to this. But the other thing that we also haven't seen, at least not since everyone always just points to Detroit 04, we have not seen a team win an NBA Finals without a bona fide elite superstar.
Mm-hmm.
It just hasn't happened. the last couple of years, we've been absolutely smothered with Steph Curry versus LeBron James. Back in Miami, it was still LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. You have Dirk Nowitzki in when he was still an absolute gunner.
Yep.
Those are the teams that win, mm-hmm. right? A full-fledged superstar. Even the Spurs, they had a ton of talent. They had a young Kawhi. They're led by the unflappable Tim Duncan. Like, these are teams that have a guy that you know that you can count on. So this is also something that I'm really interested to see how it plays out, because the Raptors don't have that guy. They have an all-star starter in Pascal Siakam. Is he a top five player in the league? No. That's different than being in the MVP conversation. And people always seem to get that confused. Just because someone's not having a quote unquote MVP year, it doesn't mean that they all of a sudden drop out of the top 15 talented hoopers that you can go to. So the Raptors don't have a top five player. And that's going to be interesting. Is it really and truly a team game? Can you really and truly win together in 2020? And that's going to be fascinating for me, Viv.
Yeah. And I think the reason why the Raptors have a chance is because of the parity in the league this season compared to any other season. You don't have any other super team out there that's really going to take you on. You look at, you know, sure, you've got LeBron James and Anthony Davis together, but you look at the roster after that, and there isn't too much. I mean, you're depending on Kyle Kuzma to be
They're
your
not
third,
slander Kyle
third
Kuzma.
Scorer.
I won't have it.
But that's the reality of the situation.
Right.
And so I think for the Raptors, there is this sort of window where teams feel like they can go get this championship now. Mm-hmm. The Raptors felt it last year, and they believe they have enough to do it again this year. And the other thing I will say, as far as the Raptors are concerned and sort of, you know, defending a title without a finals MVP, this is a win-win situation for them. Because if Siakam and Van Vliet and Norman Powell and OG Anunoby, if they can all go through this experience together, no matter how it ends up, Siakam is going to learn so much about what it takes at that premier elite level. Like, we talk about teams tanking and wasting stars' years. This is an opportunity where he's still in his fourth year and he's had finals experience. He's had playoff experience year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And this is just another opportunity for him to learn and grow, for Fred VanVleet to learn and grow. Norman Powell's going to have a bigger role. OG Anunoby. And so when you look at what they'll be able to take from this run, regardless of how it ends up, they're going to be so much better for it going down the line.
With Vivek Jacob, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What do you make of these crop up every now and again Masai Ujiri to somewhere else rumors? And the reason I bring it up is that Bobby Webster is clearly ready to run an NBA franchise. So there are a variety of ways, Viv, this could go.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Masai, Bobby in perpetuity, or as close to in perpetuity as possible. And wouldn't that be wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
It could also be Masai moves on, Bobby takes over. I think the worst case scenario is that they both go when their contracts expire. What is your sense of the front office dynamic and the possibility that one or both could be here for the extended long term?
You know, with the rumors, they've come and they've gone, and so I don't think anyone really knows what Masai wants. A lot of people have sort of bandied about the narrative that Masai's done everything he can possibly do here. He's won the title. He's changed the narrative of Toronto as a basketball city. What more can he do? And for him being as competitive as he is, he might be thinking in his head, hey, I want to make the Raptors a perennial winner. I want to win 3 here. I want to win 4 here. I want to win 5 here. We don't know that. So as far as the rumors go, I think at the end of the day, it's up to what Masai wants, whether ultimately he wants a different challenge or whether he wants to keep winning in Toronto. But the one thing I have been thinking about is for the people who are panicking over Masai leaves and this franchise is going to go back to what it was, that would completely dishonor the legacy that he's tried to build here. When you think about what he's done with the Raptors 905 to create this steady pipeline of talent that can come through and develop and play at a high level, that doesn't just apply to on court. You're talking about, you know, Bobby Webster, who's learned under his wing. You're talking about Dan Tolsman, worked as the GM of the 905, and now he's the assistant GM of the Raptors. You've got Chad Sanders, who's working as the GM of the 905 now. So they've built this pipeline, and there is clearly sort of a succession plan if it comes to it. And so for Masai, regardless of whatever his decision is, I think he's put the Raptors in a good place to succeed over the long term, where you're not looking at his departure and saying, hey, it's all for naught now.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because that's something we were talking about. What motivates him, right? Mm-hmm. Does he want to be someone whose name is written about and talked about in NBA circles for life? As is he a fixer? Does he go in? Does he fix your franchise? And does he leave? Is he Mary Poppins? Essentially, is he Mary Poppins of the NBA? He comes in, resolves a problem, leaves Nanny McPhee style. You know what I mean? Not to quote too many children's movies in one. But there is something to be said for creating a dynasty. And that's not something that gets taken lightly either. Who do we talk about when we talk about the most consistent franchise in the NBA? The Spurs, mm-hmm. right? The San Antonio Spurs.
And Belichick doesn't get bored in New England.
And he's done, obviously, yeah. amazing, phenomenal things. The Detroit Red Wings at one point in time. These are all teams that expect a level of success and professionalism every single year. And those are also the names who come to mind when you think of greatness. So it's not as though going to the Knicks and making them not an embarrassment isn't a challenge. It's just a different kind of challenge. It's mm-hmm. just, what are you in for? Are you in to affect as many potential franchises as possible? Do you think that's a more difficult challenge? Or are you in it for the long haul and you're like, I love it here. I want to make this team as relevant as possible for as long as I can. Because you're right. That's something that you can definitely hang your hat on also.
And the one thing that people always talk about with Masai is like, oh, you can go to New York and you can expand your Rolodex. And
you can be on Good Morning America. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you can go to Washington and, you know, all the contacts that Obama has and all that. He can help you out. Guess what? Masai's built all those contacts while being here in Toronto.
Right.
Who's to say he can't keep doing it here?
He's like out on a peacekeeping mission right now with Trudeau.
Exactly. So I don't really see the issue in terms of him being able to expand his brand and sort of continue to be larger than life with what he's doing outside of basketball. And when you look at what he's building with this team as well, the fact that he has, you know, Siakam and Ibaka right beside him, and they can go about saying, hey, let's make these plans for the summer and let's really help Africa out in this way and let's help young boys and girls really chase their dreams. Those are opportunities that he might not have with a Washington or a New York or any other team in the league. And guess what? All these trips that he's able to make, it's because he's built this sort of steady machine that can operate in his absence. You think when he goes to the Knicks that they're just going to say, hey, yeah, go ahead and you can leave for a month.
Yeah, so
take your time.
Shambles?
We'll
no.
be fine.
Oh, he'll be dealing with James Dolan. He'll be like, excuse me, I'm stepping away for a month. I'm not giving you the choice. I need to run for the sake of my sanity. Thank you so much for coming in, for battling, because we're in Toronto, right? So a centimeter or two of snow is
that's a severe storm.
Thank you for battling through it. Thank you for coming into studio. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Vivek Jacob of Raptors Republic. The Maple Leafs are on Sportsnet 590 The Fan tonight, a game you can also watch on Sportsnet on the TV side. The Dallas Stars are in town. Campbell, Anderson, if they're healthy, the state of the Maple Leafs with Justin Bourne next.
He's given them that opportunity. He was great in Montreal in that game, and you know, winning 5 of 6 points, I think, is massive. But Freddie Anderson is your guy. I don't think he needs to be pushed internally. We've seen what he's done the last year and a half, and for a little, you know, blimp on the radar that he had right before the All-Star break, he's been phenomenal. I don't think he needs Jack Campbell to push him.
Matthew Barnaby on Good Show yesterday. Leafs and Stars tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and on Sportsnet to continue the goaltending discussion, because why not? And get into this one tonight and the bigger picture with the Maple Leafs. We welcome our good friend Justin Bourne to lead off. Hello, sir.
Scott, Ashley, Michael, hello.
Oh, I see. Oh,
that was pretty serious today. Where was the good morning? I was waiting for all morning.
Like, where's the jovial nature and the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Justin Bourne that we've grown to love?
This is a serious business. We do not have time for such frivolities.
That is, I'm not going to get myself in trouble with another drop again. Good morning from Justin Bourne.
Good morning, everyone. Hello.
That attitude is what it is, Scott.
There you go. Where do you come in on this Anderson Campbell stuff? I've suggested setting aside less than 100% health, given its head, neck, you need 100% health. I would argue regardless, Justin, Jack Campbell's been great over his first week in the city. Why not give him another start tonight regardless and load manage Freddie, even if he's ready to go tonight?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's like, a way, way out there theory. You know, Freddie is a guy who hasn't had many stretches of rest and has complained in the past. Well, not complained, but when asked, has said that he's felt a little bit tired come playoff time. So, yeah, there's some value in that. At the end of the day, I think, you know, because of how the season started with the Babcock run, with the 13-13-2 start or whatever it was there, I just don't think you're in a position to ever play anything less than the best possible lineup you can ice. And I think that, you know, that still includes Frederick Anderson. So they're going up a pretty good Dallas Stars team tonight. And if you feel that Freddie can go, even if he's, a little bit rusty after a little time off, I still think he's the guy you have to go with and give yourself the best chance to win.
I was saying earlier on the show that when guys come in and play well, that it puts a little bit of pressure on the guys coming back. And it's not so much for goaltenders, but more for players. You think there's any kind of feeling in Freddie's mind that, okay, new guy's coming in now, and now I have to press to come back?
Yeah, I 100% think there is, and I think it's great. I can't, remember a time really since Anderson has been here where there's ever been even remotely a half sense that, like, hey, if this guy gets hot, it could be interesting, for Frederick Anderson to see what happens here. And I think that was part of the reason they got a guy with an extra couple years term was now it's like, okay, well, if this guy can push Freddie and Freddie's contract is up after next season, maybe we have some options. So I think the Leafs, kind of making it known, like Freddie would be aware of all of that. I think that puts Freddie in a situation where he has to make it clear that he is the guy. And I think in the past with Frederick Anderson, every time he's been doubted, he's played his best hockey, right? Like he starts the season in October poorly. And then his Novembers, he's like a world beater. Every time it starts to be like, boy, is Freddie struggling? He shows us the best version of Freddie Anderson. So I think that this puts us in the situation where we're going to get the best version of Freddie Anderson, which is perfect.
Yeah, to piggyback on that, I didn't think that there was going to be a moment where he's like, uh-oh, my job's at risk. I better get down to business. I figured his mentality would be a little bit more along the lines of, wow, Campbell's playing really well, and he's doing what he needs to do to keep us in the fold. I don't want to be the weak link. So I'm going to do what I need to do for my team. Like, that's the motivation, not necessarily losing his job. And I know that Ziggy means more about position players as opposed to goaltenders in this instance. But that's what I think that Frederick Anderson's mentality would be in this.
That makes sense. I think there's some, I don't want to say frustration, but I think that if Freddie has kind of had it, internally with the Toronto Maple Leafs, Freddie has kind of had been in a situation where no one ever wants to point the finger at Freddie for not pulling his weight, and nor should they. He's been fantastic. But yeah, as you start to see other people do well and for the first time really do well in your role, it certainly would change your mindset.
Okay, so we thought we were going to stop talking about the goaltender situation once they made a move for a new backup. We're like, yeah, great, we don't have this conversation anymore. But now here we are, assuming that there might be a more even workload split. There's 25 games remaining, including tonight's game against the Stars. What do you see, all things created equal if Freddie's healthy, what do you see the 25 games shaking down like between these two goaltenders if the plan is to make sure that Freddie is as healthy and as rested as possible headed into the postseason?
I think that depends entirely on how it goes in the short term. Like, I feel like if they go on a run, they put together 10 games where they go, they win 8 of them or something like that, and you say, okay, they're comfortably in a playoff spot, or even
comfortably third in the Atlantic and you kind of know where they're going to finish, then I think you say, okay, now we're able to, you know, see what Jack Campbell can do, take the foot off the gas a little bit and give this guy more starts and rest Freddie up. You know, if they go on a run here where they're, you know, below 500 or even at 500 for 10, 15 games, it, you know, making playoffs is going to get awfully precarious. So yeah. I think they find themselves in a position where their success over the next little bit sets them up for playoff failure or success. So, you know, they win in the next little stretch here, they can really set themselves up nicely. And then there's the converse side of that as well.
With Justin Bourne, he is Sportsnet's NHL analyst, the co-host of Hockey Central at Noon. You hear him 10 to 11 Monday mornings as part of Good Show's Leafs Hour. And this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
What did you make about the big three of the four guys in on one line with Nylander, Matthews, and Marner? Because I thought Nylander's been great with Tavares, and I'm not really quite sure why you would break them up other than the fact that maybe Tavares was sick and he didn't want to throw Nylander with Tavares last game.
Yeah, that's, you know what's interesting? I was just hearing Sheldon say, part of it was curiosity. You know, like the most those three had played together this season prior to last game was 3 minutes and 41 seconds in a game, which, you know, that's not a ton of hockey games. So you see other teams load up their top lines. And I think he really just wanted to know before they get to playoffs, like, is this something that, you know, not something that we would do permanently, but do we even like how it looks when we need a goal? And I don't know how you guys felt about it. It was only one game, impossible to say. Nylander's been sick, but I didn't think they looked great. You know, just knowing what all three of them can do. And I love the idea of having Tavares as an engine beside Nylander, that every day you have someone who's working and who's in the pits and getting the puck. Mm-hmm. And I like having Hyman be that guy for Matthews and Marner. So when no one is there to be the daily engine, I feel like they can almost enable each other to take nights off. And I mean, I would like to see them get more run together just to see how they look with a little more time. But I didn't think it looked very good in the first experiment there.
With Justin Bourne, are the Toronto Maple Leafs better than the Florida Panthers? And you know why I'm asking that. This is for the third seed in the Atlantic Division.
I think they are. I think they are. I like their offensive depth better. I feel like once you get beyond the Huberto and Barkov, the fall off is a lot steeper than the fall off after you go deeper into the group of forwards on the Leafs.
When one thing I got to ask you quickly, I don't want to get too far off, but when you're watching Kapanen come down and had that breakaway, were you hoping he didn't pull up? Because I know you just wrote an article about breakaways versus two-on-ones. Yeah. Can you dive into this quickly?
Yeah. I mean, well, it was interesting that, you know, the stats bear it out over the 2019-20 season that you are more likely to score on a shot created off a two-on-one than on a breakaway. And so that kind of blew my mind a little bit, thinking, you know, breakaway would assume to be your best chance to score. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the, you know, what I just said there statistically, that's off a shot created off a two-on-one. And that, you know, no two-on-one is guaranteed to finish with a shot. Defensemen break up plays and break up passes. So you'll still take the breakaway. One thing I do know about Kapanen, and I clipped this as a video coach because it blew my mind. So he's one of those guys that gets a billion breakaways. He does not have a second move. Like, there's no B. There's no alternate option. He is doing the exact thing he did on that goal, and it either goes sailing up into the mesh above the net somehow, crossbar and in. So you'll take your odds. It's all or nothing with that move. I kind of like it.
Thanks for this. And on the flip side, screw you for not giving us another drop. We're counting on you for those things every week.
Gosh. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful day. Next week will give you the best I got.
All right, Justin. No. Thanks for this, pal.
He's never coming back on after that.
Yeah, he is. Well, he is Sportsnet's NHL analyst, the co-host of Hockey Central at Noon, and he is part of Good Show's Leafs Hour on Mondays, 10 to 11 a.m. He is Justin Bourne. Housekeeping item. Dominic in Tottenham, you won our tickets to the Canada-Dominican Republic basketball game on February the 21st. You won them on Monday morning. We need you to call in off air and give us some of your information. Dominic in Tottenham, the call is out. Please give us a ring. And you, yes you, could see our Toronto teams back-to-back with our VTech Wake-Up Call contest. Call 416-413-4141. and tell us what you really think. Give us your hot take. The grand prize includes tickets, hotel accommodations. You leave us your best Toronto sports take. You tune in every Friday to hear if your take was chosen. We'll play it on the air. And if we play it back, that's your cue to call for the VTech wake-up call. The line is 416-413-4141. Call anytime or visit sportsnet.ca/590 for contest details. Ashley is off to the Windy City. Will she recline her seat on the plane? And we'll discuss the NBA All-Star Weekend. Get you set for good show as well. That's next. Okay, Ashley, what seat are you sitting in on the plane? Are you 11F? Are you 2F? I just want to warn the person in behind you.
Did you say 10 or 11F? You mean 1 or 2?
Oh, 1A?
1A?
Yes,
you know on. How it is, Ziggy.
Jeez, come on, Scotty.
Sipping mimosas?
Oh, yeah. Excuse me.
In full recline.
Hi, do you have a hot towel for my hands? Thank you so much.
Just in a nice, cool one for my forehead.
Do you have a weighted eye mask? Thank you so much. Listen, my ass will be in full recline regardless of where I'm sitting. It's not that I don't care because I feel like that means I'm doing it maliciously, but seats are meant to recline. And everyone just all of a sudden decided it was the rude thing to do. But guess what? It's the rude thing for you to do to say that I can't recline when I'm having neck problems and want to just close my eyes for 2 seconds as I sip a Chardonnay.
You have had a bad week with your neck.
It's been tough.
Your neck has been...
To be fair, though, I would be reclining regardless of my neck, but right now it just suits my purpose to bring it up.
Convenient excuse. I mean, that's okay. What are you most looking forward to? Because you're going to Chicago for the NBA All-Star Weekend, so you won't be with us tomorrow and Monday.
Yep.
You'll be back Tuesday morning. It's just such a great event, and the NBA does it so well. It's celebrities and the best players in the sport. What are you most looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the media avails. When the All-Star Game was here in Toronto, I got a firsthand experience of what it was actually like, and essentially they put out a bunch of players in their own little pens. They're blocked off at podiums, and you can just walk up to whoever you want and
baseball
ask
baseball does that, yeah.
Yeah, and you can just walk up to them and ask them whatever question is on your mind. So I'll be doing a social media takeover for Sportsnet's Instagram account, so make sure you follow along. Message me if you feel like you want certain content, and I can try and get it for you if it's kind of a popular request. But yeah, I'm just excited to kind of take in the whole event. It'll be my second All-Star weekend. And yeah, I'm really, really excited. Hopefully I make it because I could fight the person behind me on the plane and not actually make it to Chicago.
Get kicked off the plane.
Imagine.
Excuse me, you reclined your seat way too quick. Oh. You hurt the person in front of you.
No. Ashley, people have phone videos of Ashley being escorted off the plane.
Oh,
and she becomes the new Karen.
You guys see
she becomes the new Karen.
You guys see, I'm not in at work tomorrow, but you see me go viral, like, is that Ashley with the towel over her head getting perp walked out of Porter?
Being escorted out with the towel stuck to your forehead. Like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Oh,
okay, Karen.
Gosh.
That'll
be
it.
Karen, I want to talk to your manager.
Yeah, I want to talk to the manager. If you want to win tickets to the Leafs Stars game tonight, so there's a tight deadline on this one. If you want to win tickets to the Leafs Stars game tonight, go to our Instagram page, search Sportsnet590 on Instagram. Sportsnet590 on Instagram. Follow us and tag who you would bring with you to cheer on the Maple Leafs tonight. You can find full details on our Instagram page and on our Instagram post. Oh, my God.
That was a new one. Full details.
Yeah, full. For the, we spell full, V-U-L-L, for full details.
Exotic of you.
Go to Sportsnet 590. Have a great time in Chicago. Will you call us at 6:05 Monday morning? So 5:05 your time?
8:30.
Our time.
Your time. There.
Okay. All right. Well, we will talk to you Monday morning.
Wait, there's a time change?
1 hour. Chicago. Yeah.
I'm not calling
You're
in.
Gaining an hour. You're gaining an hour. Yes, there's a time change in Chicago. Have a great time in Chicago. We'll talk to you Monday. See you Tuesday. We are back tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock. Good show's next. Enjoy the Leafs game tonight.